Soundtrack to Pulp Fiction.
Oh.
Soundtrack to Singles. Soundtrack to Gross Point Blank. Why do you have so many soundtracks?
Oh, well, I kind of look at it like it's your favorite directors making a mixtape just for you.
Ew.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Rewind. I am your host, Travis.
And this is X.
And thank you for tuning in.
I decided to go morning DJ this time.
That's good, I like
you
it.
You were listening to the X on Pop Culture Rewind. Drive
it to it. I like it. I like it a lot. Alright, so on this episode, we're going to change our tune just a little bit. Instead of talking about a particular franchise or what have you. I think we're going to revisit, you know, one topic that we've covered before, music. You know, early on we did an MTV episode. We did a, you know, 90s album sound episode. That one episode, the 90s albums, that was a really fun episode. However, that was an idea that you and I came up with. We're driving around the road. Listen, I can't remember what station it was, but they were playing a song from the 90s. And
it was a Houston station. I didn't think there was any decent Houston stations left that would play 90s music.
There's not. We got lucky, trust me. But anyway, we're like, this kind of...
Was it a Filter song? Or I don't know why I'm thinking that.
No.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It was a Tool. It was a Tool song.
That's what I said.
Filter Tool, whatever, it's all the same.
A filter is a kind of tool.
There you go, yeah.
Ooh. Saved it.
That's why we keep you around. No.
Yeah.
You know, listening to that music, it just it flipped a switch, and we said, hey,
that's right, I think 90s. It was a song off, it was a track off Anima, and I said, like, this is probably one of the best albums of the 90s.
Because it hit, and then you just, like, immediately you were able to, like, remember the lyrics, and you started singing it, and you haven't even heard that song in so long, but yet, when it hit,
I was, like, I was singing along, and you have that surprise expression, like, you know, your body's taken over, and you don't even, like, oh my god, I didn't know I still had that in me, that I knew all these fucking lyrics that don't rhyme, and I was like, yeah, that's such a good album back in the day. Most people go Undertow, I swim against the stream, I go Anima.
And with that, yeah, we did decide to do an episode, but just through timing issues, and I wanted to get an episode out with, I was talking to the owners of Dimensions Comics and More. They have like a music part in the back, and it's a comic shop in the front over here in the Houston area, but... So I wanted to get it out because of that, but unfortunately you weren't able to make it into town, or we weren't able to Skype or anything like that. So I really wanted you to be there, but I figure we'll right the wrong and we'll do this episode right here, which is going to be the best 90s movie soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is right up my alley. I was heavy into soundtracks when I was a kid. I think I owned 10 soundtracks before I ever bought an album by an artist. Yeah. A couple quick stipulations on our list, though. I didn't want to include scores. Any film scores. If it was, then I would have put, like Fifth Element in this list. It's a great score. And nothing where, like, the music was written for the movie, like a musical. Again, I might have put Nightmare Before Christmas on there. I love that album. This is more like collections of musics that the director or music, you know, whatever. Mixtapes.
Okay, so that's your disclosure. That's your disclaimer for your, which I don't even think we've mentioned it. This is going to be a top 10 list episode. We're gonna count down.
Yeah,
our personal top 10 movie soundtracks. That's your disclaimer. That's the specifications that you're going off of to kind of funnel.
Okay, what
down
are yours?
Mine is more. It's just personal to me. It's not specifically like you know, best top charting, chart topping music, or anything like that. It's just going to be, if it's an album that I bought, you know, I went, like, for example, I went back, I still have some old CDs. I looked through my CD collection and I still have some old soundtracks. I'm like, holy shit, I still have this. And I looked at the track listings. I was like, oh God, this is a good song. Oh, this is a good song. And it made me remember like what I liked about it at that time. So yeah. This is more personal.
I agree with
it's
you.
It's not going to be, yeah. It may not be good, but to me it's personal. So
no, yeah, no, this is a totally personal list, and for personal reasons, it has not, this is not Rolling Stones' top 10 soundtracks of the 90s list.
Exactly.
By any
exactly.
stretch of the imagination. No, this is totally personal, and my list is a bit arbitrarily ranked. I had, like, literally 5 minutes before recording, I had my top 10, and I, like, oh shit, I guess this is 6, I guess this is 5. It was kind of like that at the very last minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I'm the same with my list, too. I have a really good solid list, but they're not in any particular order that's set in stone. So, you know, just keep that in mind as we go down the list.
Yeah, to make my list, I pulled up my iTunes and my music list. I figure if I don't own it, then it must not have, you know, obviously I can't honestly say it's a great soundtrack if I don't even own the thing.
Right.
So I didn't even go online. I just looked at my own personal music library and my soundtrack iTunes.
Yeah, dude, it was actually kind of hard. Like when you.
That's what she said.
Yeah, when we were talking about doing this episode, I told you, man. I was like, man, I was having a hard time trying to find, you know, ten albums on here, but because I think I was overthinking it, and I was like I was Googling and all this other stuff. And I was like, wait a minute, what am I doing? It's like this is,
yeah,
I can't like. Like I, it's easy to say what's the top 10 of the 90s like box up, not box, but how much, you know, what made the most money, what was
album
the,
sales,
yeah, and things like that. And
then like Titanic would have been the number
exactly,
one.
Yeah. So it wouldn't have been a very fun list. It would have been very by the numbers type thing. So I think this is going to be a really good one. There was one stipulation that you wanted me to abide
yeah.
by.
Well, did you?
I did.
Okay,
I did.
I mean, why is? I mean, was I wrong for wanting you to?
Well, explain.
If anybody
explain
listens to
your
the top,
stipulation that you wanted me to go off of.
Okay, and you sound so accusing as you say it. in the 90s albums episode that you and Chris did, you're somewhere in your list. I don't remember the number, but it was a soundtrack to a movie. And I thought, well, you can't make that your number one because if it's your top album of the 90s. Clearly, it would be your number one in this list, and it's like spoiler. Everybody would know you're number one. So, what? I'm thinking of the listeners here who care about what music Travis listens to,
and I'm sure they thank you for your caringness. Mm-hmm.
And if you want to know what that number one album was, go back and listen to the episode top 90s albums.
Yeah, and we've done.
I'm not going to say
that becomes a it's becoming a theme. Like we've done top 90s cartoons. Top 90s albums, mm-hmm. Now top 90s movie soundtracks. So
yeah, 90s were a fun time.
They were, yeah. Fun time.
Should do like top 90s fashion that we wish would come back.
Apparently, do you remember JNCOs? They're coming back. The big pants.
Yeah, I don't want those to come back.
Yeah, well, guess what?
I mean, it could be like what we wish we could get away with wearing, or it could be what we wish chicks would start wearing. Either way. Yeah. There might be something there. Put a pin in that one, too. Anyways, did you want to get this started?
You want to kick this pig?
Kick a pig?
It's a saying.
Who says that?
Abel says it on Houston Wrestling Radio. You can catch them at HoustonWrestlingRadio.com. Oh, okay. okay, so would you like to go first on our countdown of the top 90s
movie soundtracks?
Okay, I will.
Yeah, okay. Gosh, I'm already regretting this top 10. You know me, I like to kick things off with a controversial, wow, really kind of a thing. And this really sets up, this is not a reflection of what we think are good albums and has no reflection of whether the movie's good or not. Because this list, or at least my list.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this, I think Chris said it really well in your 90s albums, he was like, this is like a reflection of why you are the man you are today. and why he is the asshole he is today. I don't think I could agree more with that sentence. So, these albums, like, you know, they shaped us who we are, for better or worse. And so, for my number 10 album soundtrack, is a fun little movie from 1996 starring Bugs Bunny and Michael Jordan called Space Jam.
See, my initial reaction was to say, wow, really? But you just said that's your reaction that you wanted. So, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Space Jam. Again, I'm going to say this for maybe a few of these. I was working at the movies. And when you clean up popcorn, listen to the end credits, you hear a lot of their music. You know, me and my friends, we'd be dancing to some of this music and having fun and making jokes. And it gave me like a positive impression. And now this album had a lot of, obviously, had like a lot of R&B, which was not really my jam. It was not my Space Jam when I was a kid. Although, like, everybody was into it. R&B was really big in the 90s.
Yeah.
It was very popular. Mm-hmm. And all my friends were into it. And it's just, you know, it wasn't my thing. And I bought the album thinking, like, this is going to open me up to the world of, like, R&B. And then I can, you know, listen, I can talk music with other people, and I'll be normal.
You'll be normal.
You know, it had like yeah, it had like R. Kelly, and you know, it had that really fun album, or that one song. It was like LL Cool J, Busta Rhymes, Method Man, Be Real, and Coolio.
Yeah,
I hit him high. I still sometimes will listen to that song and flow with the whole thing, and it's fun as fuck to sing along with that whole song and try and rap, because they're all very distinctly different sounding rappers with their own unique way of doing it. Yeah, it's super fun. I never listen to this album anymore. Maybe that song sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I listen to it a lot, and it could have been potentially the thing that opened me up to a whole new genre of music. And it kind of did. Like I said, I started looking into more into R&B to seeing if this album would be a gateway to that. It wasn't. It's just never really been my jam. But
yeah,
this album was important, and it could have potentially been life changing. It wasn't, but
potentially
for that reason, it wasn't. It's a fun album, though. I mean, there's this song that like Christina Aguilera had a really big hit, and it was that song like "I Turn to You." But it was on this album, sung by this shitty boy band called All For One. And then when she puts out her single, like, years later, I was like, bitch, I was rocking that out years ago in Space Jam soundtrack. Aw.
That was, bitch. Yeah, because that had, you know, I Believe I Can Fly. That was, like, I think the thing that went on that one. Wasn't there one by,
That was, I Believe I Can Fly? Oh, yeah, that was the R. Kelly one, I Believe I Can Fly. It had a Seal cover of Fly Like an Eagle.
Yeah.
Fly like an Eagle. That was a good song. Of course, it had that great Quad City DJ
song.
There
you go. Yeah.
Follow up there. Come on, ride a train. It was basically the same song, but come on, do a Space Jam and jam it. That's not how it went, but it was essentially how it went.
Pretty much, yeah. Just tweak it just a little bit.
Yeah.
But the,
and it had like an updated version of Basketball Jones, you know, with Chris Rock on it. Anyways. It's a funny. I just wanted to. I think this shows that, like, wow, it has nothing to do with the movie. It has nothing to do with the quality of music either, in some sense.
It's a sign of time. That's what it is.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it reflected who I was at that age, you know. So so Space Jam from '96 is my number 10.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Well, speaking of Space Jam, I just thought about this. They announced they're actually going to do a sequel.
I've heard that.
Yeah, with the LeBron James, he's going to be like the human, I guess.
Hey, LeBron, I got this great role for you. You are starring as the human. It's the part I was born to play, baby.
You're literally going to play yourself. Mm-hmm. Can you do it? All right, so that was your number 10. All right.
Yeah.
So my number 10. It's funny that you mentioned that, you know, it's kind of like your portal, your window into like hip hop, things like that, R&B, things like that. This one, my number 10, it was almost ahead of its time by mixing genres together. This is for 1993's Judgment Night.
You know what's weird? I saw like 20 minutes of that movie on TV yesterday. It was on television. I was like, I haven't seen this movie in years. That's so funny. I haven't thought of Judgment Night in forever. And then I watched it yesterday and you talk about it now. Okay.
It's crazy, man.
I never owned that one. What was on that one?
There was the main track off that one. It was, I think it was the title track. It was called Judgment Night, but it was by Biohazard and Onyx. And it introduced me to both those bands, but like, it was more rap for Onyx and then of course like heavy metal for Biohazard, but and pretty much the whole soundtrack's like that. It's got like kind of fused genres by different bands, and but that one track kind of like stood out for me.
Were there other tracks with two different type of artist, or was it like just, you know, one track is rap, the next track is metal, or were there more like collaborations?
So there's other tracks like Ice-T teaming up with Slayer, Run DMC, and Ooh. Living Color.
Well, in Living Color was kind of a, well,
sort of, yeah. Was there Cypress Hill with Sonic Youth?
Oh, really? Wow.
Pearl Jam and Cypress Hill. So it's just something different, you know. If you like these bands and you're a fan of both genres, check out the soundtrack. I mean, it's a good mix of, like I said, of the, what do they call it, fused, I think it's what, fused genres, but
yeah, fusion, rock, rap, yeah. Fusion, whatever.
But anyway, that's
Asian, Italian fusion, whenever you combine two things.
But anyway, that's my number 10 for Judgment Night 1993.
So. I was watching that movie, like I said on TV, it was tripping me out how bald Jeremy Piven was in 93 and how much hair he seems to have today. It's crazy.
Crazy.
So, and it was funny watching Dennis Leary be like a badass. Okay. So that's your number 10. My number 9. There's not a whole story to this one. It's really just, it was a movie from 1995, and I mentioned this before in our Kevin Smith episode. It's Mallrats.
Okay.
Like I said, I watched that movie like almost every day one summer, and obviously the music was a big part of it. And we would, you know, we liked the music. We would play the credits, you know. And then it's like, hey, the credits are rolling. Let's finally start to get ready for work. We'd rock out to that Suzanne by Weezer. Which they played during the credits. It's a good song. And I mean, this was just a good album of just a good spattering of like alternative 90s music. You know, you had Bush, you had Weezer, you had Sponge, you had Elastica. You know, it was
Elastica.
Yeah. And the soundtrack had like dialogue of the movie, which for me, who was like a big movie buff, it was like, oh my god, I love hearing just segments of fun dialogue and shit. It was, you know, Jason Lee dialogue in the middle of listening to some music is always a fun treat,
right? Yeah, can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, and like I said, there's no story. It was, you know, I was already into this kind of music. Again, I don't know if I was buying albums yet, but I knew who Bush was because I'd see their videos on MTV, and I knew who Sponge was because I saw their videos. And so this, I don't know, this was starting to broaden my horizons into music in general. In alternative music, which is what I was really into in the mid-90s.
Okay.
And that was just a great period for alternative music, was the mid-90s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez.
Mm-hmm. And this album was just kind of a good little stepping stone for somebody who wasn't really buying music yet, who was still just listening to the radio and watching MTV and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, this is the Bush song that isn't a single, and it's good. Oh, this is a Sponge song that's not a single, but I like it. Shit like that. So, yeah, for those reasons, and for Jason Lee's monologues, I put Mallrats as my number 9 album.
Was there a favorite track of yours off that one, or was it Suzanne by Weezer?
I think I bought it because of Suzanne, and I mean, there was some good tracks in there that weren't, like, I never heard of them, but I knew them from the movie, like the one in the beginning when all the comic book titles are coming at you and they're saying the actors' names or playing this fun song By a band called Squirt Gun. I never even heard of them, but I was like, that's a fun song, and I heard it on the album, and I liked it. It has... I don't even like Sublime that much, but they have a song on there, that Smoke Two Joint song, which was really fun, you know, when I was a teenager and I was a stoner. I was like, yeah, I smoked 2 joints and shit, made me feel cool. Silverchair's in there too. That cover of Build Me Up Buttercup when Jason Lee is banging Shannon Doherty in the elevator. Yeah. Like, why do you build me up, Buttercup, baby? And I don't usually like it when, like, punk bands just sort of cover old classic songs, but I don't know, I kind of like that one too. I don't know if I have a favorite. It probably is that Suzanne song. I think it is, because I would, because it plays during the whole credits.
Yeah.
And like I said, since I didn't own the album for a while, I would just play the tape and use that as like my CD. I'm watching the movie in the background.
All right, so that's your number 9, right?
That was my number 9, Mallrats.
All right. So, for my number 9, I've kind of got the same feeling like you had for your number 10, but I included it anyways. 1994's Jerky Boys.
That was a movie?
That was a movie, yes. Most people now, they're like, who the fuck are the Jerky Boys? If you're around in the 90s, Jerky Boys were two dudes. They did phone pranks. You know, back in the day, there was no internet or caller ID, so you could get away with doing this kind of shit. But they did a lot. That's what they're known for. They had a lot of different characters and voices they would do. And it was kind of like almost equivalent.
It was like Crank Yankers minus puppets.
Yeah, Crank Yankers minus puppets, yeah. like an audio version of Jackass. I don't know. Basically just getting away as much as you can.
Wait, so what was the movie about?
Dude, honestly,
how do you make a movie about that?
Dude, honestly, I don't remember. But honestly, I still have the soundtrack. I still have the CD in my closet. But
what was on it? Like,
there were some tracks. Back in that time, I was I like Collective Soul, and they had a single on this one called Jail. There's some other ones, 2,000 Light Years Away by Green Day, that was on there. Then they had some other songs by Coolio, House of Pain is on there too, but Wu-Tang. But it was a combination of, they had some songs, and then kind of similar to like the Mallrats thing, where they had like, not like clips, but they had like pranks. You know, they would throw in one or two of their pranks in between the tracks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because before the movie came out, the way they got really popular, they had 2 audio CDs that came out. It was just recordings, all their pranks that they've done. I think I still have those 2.
I've always heard the words Jerky Boys, and I knew that that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
I can't honestly say I've ever actually listened to them.
Yeah, they're, to me, especially being a teenager, they were hilarious.
Really?
I guess it's all subjective. It may not be funny to some people, but to me, I got a kick out of them. And they've done, like I said before, there are like so many different voices and characters, one of which you can still hear today on Family Guy. The guy that plays Mort Goldman, he's kind of a ripoff of one of their characters they did, but one of the Jerky Boys does the voice for Mort on Family Guy. So
I thought that was Seth Green.
Mm-mm.
No, Seth Green does the kid.
Right, yeah.
Hey, Meg. Yeah, okay, I'm thinking. Oh, Mort. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so... but anyway, that's... I'm kind of curious if anybody else has...
heard of the Jerky Boys.
Yeah, or if this resonates with them or not. But anyway, that's my number 9. 1994's Jerky Boys.
I mean, like I said, I never listened to them, but I knew who they were, and I knew what they did, even if I... You know, so... Yeah, I'm sure there's people who remember the Jerky Boys, even if they don't... I couldn't finger one of them in a lineup.
Well, you couldn't because they had masks. They had they covered their faces up all the time. Haha, see?
Really? They were like Slipknot, but phone prankers?
Yeah.
They were like the Daft Punk of phone prankers?
They had like bandanas over their face or something. I don't know. They had something where they're covering their faces because you didn't
really
know. Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway, that's...
Okay. Yeah. So that was your... Where am I at?
That was my number 9.
So we're up to my number 8. Okay, my number 8, God, I hate to do this again. it's kind of for similar reasons of the last one. It was a movie from 94, and I bought it for like one or two specific songs, and then it turns out like, wow, there really was a lot of good music in it by artists, almost none of them I've even heard of. And that is the soundtrack to Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I really, really loved this soundtrack. It was 94. It was like, it was in that age of music where like grunge was sort of starting to subside a little bit, and music was starting to get a little bit more happy.
Mm-hmm.
And this music is just, it's all positive and like uplifting sounding alternative music. You know, it's poppy and jumpy. And like, I bought it for that song that I got a new age girl. I mean, if anybody's seen the movie, they remember that song. Rah, dun, dun, dun. And I bought it for that one. And it turns out it was just a super, super fun soundtrack. Like, I've heard of a couple of the albums, like a couple of the guys on, like Proclaimers and Green Jelly and Butthole Surfers, who do a cover of Hurdy Gurdy Man, a song by Donovan from like the 60s, which I really love. But like some of the other ones were groups I never heard of and songs that are just in the movie, and they're just like fun. they're just refreshingly positive and uplifting, feel good. You know, you want to put the top down on your car on a sunny day and drive around and listen to some of these songs. Some of the songs are in that road trip montage, because they're on a road trip for like, right, you know, the whole middle of the movie. Maybe that's why I associate driving and listening to these songs. And I did have a convertible when I was 16. And yeah, and I do remember putting the top down and listening to these songs and driving. And it's good driving music. Yeah, although the Cow Sills, the Rain the Park, and the other things, not on this. Or Pretty Woman by Roy Orbison. I mean, there's some songs in the movie that didn't make it into the CD. Red Right Hand. But still a good album. Still a good soundtrack that I think is fun. If you like the movie.
Okay. I've never listened to that soundtrack for the movie, but yeah, I can see there being
film.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about the music in it, yeah. That could be, yeah, that is a good soundtrack. Okay, so that's your number eight?
That's my number eight, I'm thinking. Yeah. Okay. Eight. Yeah.
So my number eight is from 1995. It's a movie that was created from the success of a video game that is created on Mortal Kombat.
I got that right before you said it.
You know that music. Fight. Yeah, like as soon as that you know, yeah. What, yeah, you could besides Mortal Kombat just being a huge craze for what this 92, 93, 94, that first part of the decade there. Another fad was techno music, and they kind of merged these two things. Like this whole soundtrack is pretty much techno, wasn't it?
Mostly, not all of it, because this album introduced me to Fear Factory.
There you go.
And yeah. And Zero Signal off the album Demanufacture, which is an awesome album, is and I wouldn't call Fear Factory techno, but for the most part, yeah, like 90% of it's techno.
Yeah, I think. KMFDM, they had a single on here, Juke Joint Jezebel.
Juke Joint Jezebel. Yeah, I remember that was also in, wasn't that in Bad Boys 2? Or, I mean, Bad Boys also?
Yeah, we might get there later. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think just on the strength of how popular that franchise was, and on that single, the Mortal Kombat theme itself, I had to include it in my list, because man, it hit you, man. That was a powerful little song just to get you motivated, you know, when you're like when you're trying to play the game, or just, you know, just if you hear the music, it pumps you up.
Yeah, I actually was tempted to put that on mine, but I had a feeling you were gonna put it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just to avoid overlap.
Mm-hmm.
Which is maybe why I kind of just lumped in maybe Mallrats at the end, for some of the same reasons that you said about this, I really like this album too. For me, I think the best, I mean, like I said, that Fear Factory song is fucking awesome, but the one by Tracy Lords, if you know who Tracy Lords is, she was like a porn star in the 80s when she was like 15.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, and then she turns 18 years old and records one movie and lets it leak that I'm 18, and now she owns all of her shit. Anyway, whatever. She, along with Juno Reactor, did that song where which scene is it? It's the one where Reptile's fighting Liu Kang. That awesome techno fucking song. Damn, that song pumps me up, dude. That's a good fucking track too.
Yeah, dude. I'm telling. There's a lot of like good, I'm trying to think of the word to use for it, but it's It'll pump you up.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's the it's called Techno Syndrome. The Mortal Kombat. Dun, 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 dun. That's the one everybody remembers. The video game put out an album, and it was that group who did that song, mm-hmm. along with like 8 other songs about each character. Like yeah, Johnny Cage had a techno song,
yeah,
and
right.
Kano had a techno song,
yeah.
And Sonya Blade, I'm Sonya Blade, it's just pretty thing. Sonya had a techno song, Liu Kang had his own song, Goro had a fucking song, and it was all by the group who did that Mortal Kombat.
It's like they took that one title track and then they splintered it off into all the characters.
Yeah, and I have that album, and like half of those songs are, again, on my workout playlist. That's a good album, too. But it wasn't technically a soundtrack, it was a video game soundtrack.
So anyway, okay. that's my number 8, Mortal Kombat from 1995.
Cool. Okay, so my number 7? Yeah. I felt like I just had to include something by this director on here. Although he only had 2 movies in the 90s. And that director is Wes Anderson. He's one of my favorite directors. And I picked Rushmore over Bottle Rocket. But Rushmore is a good album. And this one... Almost all of his albums, this guy you could tell really, really loved that British invasion, man. Almost all of his albums have a lot of Beatles, Rolling Stones, The Who, The Kinks. A lot of those guys are in here. And that, I mean, obviously I knew who these bands were, and I knew a lot of Beatles, but like The Kinks in particular, Wes Anderson introduced me to them, and now they're freaking awesome. And this album has a lot of like 70s music. You know, mm-hmm. Cat Stevens is in here, and The Who, and I, even though I said I don't count scores, a good chunk of this music is the score of the movie. Who all these movies mostly are composed by Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo. Mm. Yeah, he also provides music for a little podcast we know. Don't sue us. But yeah, there's some John Lennon in there. And this movie, I think it has this soundtrack totally fits and complements. Like I think I said it when we were talking about Quentin and how he's so good at choosing music that complements his movie. And I said maybe Wes Anderson is the only guy I can think of who does it better. So these songs fit the movie so fucking good. And when you listen to this album, it really puts you in this quirky state of mind that the movie, the world that his movies live in. And it's just so fun, and it's, yeah, and like I said, this was 99, and it's mostly music from, like, the 70s and stuff, so it was introducing me to new bands and a whole new genre of music that I was aware of, but, you know, mostly listened to because, like, my dad was listening to it or something. Yeah. But now I was kind of branching out on my own and starting to enjoy it in my own right, guys, bands like The Kinks and things like that.
It's good to go back and revisit, or not revisit, but, like, kind of... You know, experience listening to like you know older music, you know, from past generation, yeah. Like you said, the '70s. When this is like 99, and this is talking about the '70s music.
Yeah, because 99, I think, is when like pop music, personally, my opinion was going downhill, and I was starting to like, you know, in the mid-90s, I was all about whatever was the top 10 on TRL, and then as the millennium was winding down, I was like, I'm not really into whatever's being popular, and my music tastes. Started to grow, but it was like reverse. It started going backwards, and I started looking up for old music instead of watching TRL. I was, hey, what were they doing in the '80s? What were they doing in the '70s? And this album was instrumental in me. And there's actually a couple other albums that kind of had the same effect on me, that introduced me to older shit and got me into that. And that's in my early 20s. I was listening to like a lot of older shit, and really broadening my horizons. And this album was like a big part of me. You know, just starting to turn, you know, pivot and start looking backwards instead of forwards.
Yeah. Now, and this was
99.
This is your foray into that whole music, right?
Well, it was more just into, like I said, going back. And like I said, like today's music, they're not producing shit that I'm into. So let me turn around and see, you know, what's been around for 30 years. And oh my God, there's a lot of good shit here. So, yeah. And like I said, it was a lot of British invasion. A lot of Kinks, Who, and Beatles, which is always good. Cat Stevens, too. I always heard the name Cat Stevens, but this is the first time I was like, oh, that's Cat Stevens? Like, fuck, that's a good song. So, yeah, that was my number 7, Rushmore.
All right, okay. Okay, so for my number seven, you might be surprised that it's this low on my list here. From 1995, Bad Boys.
Okay.
Because you know me, you know I love that movie. But
it's a good fucking movie.
This is funny because it's like right after my last one where we talked about Juke Joint Jezebel. Well, that song was so popular in 95 that it had to be thrown on this CD as well, too.
Called it.
but that is that's not the reason why this is on my list. This soundtrack has it's more R&B, hip-hop type, you know, more hip-hop, but it's just there's some good tracks in here. But the gem on this soundtrack for me is the Bad Boys theme by Mark Mancina. That's just a great
piece. Oh, you mean the one they use for the cops? Bad Boys, Bad Boys, what you gonna do? That song?
No, not that one, you goof.
What?
The musical
you
theme.
You said the Bad Boys theme.
Yeah.
Nobody don't get the door ring. Yeah, everybody knows that song.
Well, you might like that one, but I like the other one composed by Mark Mancina.
Inner Circle, I think, is the guys who do that. No, I know that. I know the musical. Dun, 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 dun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good song to be driving around to.
It is good driving music.
Dun, 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 dun. That's a good. Yeah, that's a good little piece of film score.
It is, and it's one of those things where they would use bits and pieces of throughout the movie, like in between like transitional scenes or like little background music here and there. Yeah. But the overall score, like that song itself, man, it's so good. It just has a nice crescendo at the top there, and it ends perfectly. So it's great.
Yeah, you did you own that song? I guess you did own that soundtrack.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I had like a mixtape of music, and I came over one time, and I just kind of copied that song, the theme, the score, yeah. And I still have that mixtape lying around somewhere. I could go grab it if you want to see it. but yeah, I remember loving. I was just learning to drive, and so driving is such an exciting thing. And that little song many times was like, "Fuck, I'm cool."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does make you feel cool when you're driving. Yeah.
It makes you feel cool. Yeah.
That's really all I gotta say about that one. Other than the movie's really good too. No, but yeah, that's my number seven for Bad Boys, 1995.
Bad Boys. Okay, so we're up to nine number six.
Yes.
Okay. Ooh. This is a good one. It's from 1996. It's comedy. Like I said, from 96. It's The Cable Guy.
Oh, okay. What kind of songs do they have on Cable Guy?
Well, the there's a lot of good ones in here. Filters, Hey Man, Nice Shot was in there. I don't know if it's actually on. No, yeah, it is in the soundtrack. You remember that song? The title was called Standing Outside of a Broken Phone Booth with Money in My Hand by Primitive Radio Gods. It was a big single. They were like a one-hit wonder. I've been down hearted, babe.
Yes.
That song was in there, too. That was a big. But the one that really got me was there's a scene in the movie where Jim Carrey's at a karaoke party, and he covers Jefferson Airplane, Somebody to Love. You might recognize the song by Jefferson Airplane. And he sings Somebody to Love at a karaoke session. And that song was very popular. They even made a music video. They would play it on MTV all the time. But I knew exactly like how far into the movie that song would play. I want to say it was like 54 minutes in the movie or something like that. I don't know. But we always knew, hey, that song's about to come on. And like, hey, like X, Xavier, like, come on. Whatever ushers were available, we'd all rush in the theater, and I would like lip sync and dance that song in the back of the theater while like three or four ushers would look on, and just it was like a thing. I would do it like almost every day, sometimes more than once a day. I do three shows a week. So for that reason, that song like was super fun to me, and I couldn't wait to like actually own it. Like so, Jerry Cantrell. Has a song in there, Leave Me Alone, which they play in the credits. And so you clean up the theater to that Jerry Cantrell song, which is fucking awesome. He's a singer-songwriter, of Alice in Chains. Mm-hmm. Like Cypress Hill and Toadies, those are some other good ones. But there's this other song that plays during the credits by Cracker. And there was this dude who worked with us. He had probably failed school a couple years because he was super old. He had like a beard and he was like a senior. And he had like a mullet, now that I think about it. But it was cool in the 90s. And he was just like he was like a really cool guy in school, and he was old and shit. And I didn't think I'd become friends with him, but we became friends that summer, actually. And it was kind of funny, because I'm, like, barely 16, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm hanging out with the coolest senior. And he really liked that Cracker song. He was like, you bought the album? I was like, yeah, let's sit. And we'd sit in our car, like, at work. Like, you know, like, should we be getting back to work? He's like, yeah, fuck it. And we're just sitting in our car, and I'm like, well, I'm playing my soundtrack, and the cool guy. It's like a bromance. It was a summer bromance I had. And this was our song. This was the song to my summer bromance with Rigo, who strangely enough, I kind of name dropped him last time. He's the guy who me and him found that bag of popcorn with jizz all over it.
Yeah, you did mention that last episode.
Yeah, isn't it funny? I haven't thought of this guy in forever, and now he comes up twice. Comes on a bag of popcorn.
Yeah,
twice. But yeah, it's a really cool soundtrack. It's mostly alternative music, like I said, Silverchair, Porno for Pyros. There's a cool cover of a Velvet Underground song on there. It was just a cool soundtrack, but more than just the good music, and it is good music. It was a snapshot of that summer, of the people I knew because of it, of the experiences and fun I had because of that scene and all that kind of stuff. For that reason, yeah, this one is one of my favorite soundtracks of the 90s. I kind of wish I had put it lower on the list, or I'm sorry, higher on the list. You know, right, closer to number one. But too late now. That is my number six.
Okay, all right. So for my number six, this is another soundtrack that I kind of forgot about, and then I rediscovered it, and I realized how good it was. It was from 1997, Lost Highway.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Lost Highway, produced by Trent Reznor. There's a lot of Nine Inch Nails tracks. I mean, there's some Nine Inch Nails tracks. There's Marilyn Manson tracks. There's Smashing Pumpkins on here. Just a really, really cool. David Bowie's on here. Just a really cool soundtrack. When this soundtrack came out, I was into Nine Inch Nails. I was into Manson, Smashing Pumpkins. They just come off of Melancholy, so. This is a good one for me personally. This is the time frame it came out, so I know some of the tracks on here. At the time, I had Marilyn Manson CDs, and then he would have a thing where he would have like a single here or a single there, or you had to find this one song on this soundtrack or over here. This was one case where he had his cover for "I Put a Spell on You." Was on this one.
And that's, oh, yeah, I remember
that's
that.
That's a badass cover.
When I think of this album, I think of the, obviously, the Nine Inch Nails. Is it Perfect Drug?
Perfect Drug, yeah.
You are the perfect drug, the perfect drug. Yeah, that was a good song.
Yeah. Also, Smashing Pumpkins, I. There, that was...
it's like a slow jam, right?
Sort of, yeah.
Doom, 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 doom. Yeah, I think I might have owned the soundtrack.
It's a badass soundtrack.
I think I did, but I don't know if I ever got around to, like... I think I lost it before I got, like, a computer and was able to, like, upload all my albums.
There's a couple songs...
I remember
songs.
Owning this, but I don't think I have it in my iTunes.
There's a couple songs by Rammstein that are in here.
Really?
Like I said, David... Yeah, David Bowie's on here. God. So yeah, dude. Yeah. So if y'all have it, if this is maybe it's gone on the radar or whatever, if you're into these bands I just mentioned, check that one out. This is a good album. I had it up on my list. I had it. It was closer to 10. I lowered it. Purpose of this countdown, I just lowered it. But,
it was at number 10 originally?
No, it was at like number 8, I think.
Oh, and but you bumped it down to 6. You bumped it twice. Wow.
Yeah. So that was my number six, Lost Highway, 1997.
Okay, so we're down in my number five. Okay, you kind of said all this about, but now it's my turn to say the exact same thing, only about a different album, and that is the 1995 album soundtrack for the film Hackers.
Oh, okay, cool. All right.
What you said about introducing you to electronica and techno and all that kind of stuff, that's what this album did for me. This album, with, you know, Underworld, it taught me who Prodigy was way before everybody was running around yelling smack my bitch up. And yeah, there's like two Prodigy songs on this, Left Field It's just all techno. Mm-hmm. There's a song on here that is also on the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, a song by Orbital called Halcyon and On and On. Okay. It's the one they play in the opening credits, and in Mortal Kombat, it's the one they play in the end, just before Shao Kahn shows up. When it's all happy, right after he defeats...
Oh, okay.
Shang, it's like that... It's like this ethereally sweet, poppy, bouncy kind of song. It's really, it's cool as fuck. Yeah, I mean, this soundtrack, it's just pure techno. And this was in like 95 when I actually thought Hackers was cool. A little bit of perspective, you're like, what the fuck was this movie? This was not what kids were dressing like. This is not what kids were into, but the music was good. But we were not all rollerblading, wearing crazy ass shit that they were wearing.
The hell you say?
But the music was good. The soundtrack was pretty good. And yeah, there's some really good techno shit, some sexy ass techno shit on here. Yeah, Hackers. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't, I can't sell you on it. We're talking music here.
All right, so that's your number 5.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of said a lot of it with Mortal Kombat. Like I said, Hackers was my gateway into a new genre.
Okay. All right. So, for my number 5, and by the way, I'm wondering when we're going to start bumping into each other's list here. I'm surprised we haven't yet, honestly.
Yeah.
But this is pretty cool. It's, yeah. All right, so my number 5, and I think we might end this we might end the streak with this one, actually. Number 5 from 1995, from a pretty big franchise. We've covered this on a past episode. Batman Forever.
Ah. Yeah.
Is this on your list?
No, it's not, actually.
Okay.
But I have mentioned in the podcast before how much I love this album.
Yes.
And I think that's why I deleted it, or didn't add it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because I felt like I had said a lot about it before.
Yeah. And it's true. We have spoken a lot about it, you know, and we've covered a lot about this movie in our Batman episode. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about it. But, you know, obviously tracks like the Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me, and even more obvious, Kiss From a Rose. Those are the two big singles from the soundtrack that... everybody knows him about, so obviously, I mean, if you haven't heard of him, I'd be surprised if you haven't heard of him.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty big soundtrack. So.
It was really good. There's an Offspring song on there that's really good. There's even a Brandy song on there that I gotta admit I like a lot. And there's one of my favorite songs on the whole album is the one by the Flaming Lips, Bad Days. That's a really good fucking song up there too. Yeah, it's a good soundtrack. Yeah. But I was tempted to put it on my list. I was going to make it an honorable mention, but I bumped it just because I felt like I've talked about that one a lot in another episode. And X does not repeat himself. Do you hear me? Does not repeat himself.
Mm-hmm.
So, going to my number 4. Wow. They're going away fast. Number 4. This is I kind of wish I had split these up, because I'm going to say a lot about this, what I said about the very last one, and then it kind of introduced me to techno and a new genre. Only this was more British techno, which is kind of different. It's kind of a horse of a different color, and that's from the 1996 brilliant film Trainspotting.
Oh, okay.
Holy fuck, dude. This is an amazing soundtrack. So good, they had to put out a sequel soundtrack. Trainspotting 2, with more music from the motion picture, and it had more songs that they just couldn't fit the first time around. So in a way, there's like two soundtracks. I think the big one people remember is that Iggy Pop song, Lust for Life, but I mean, this had like Lou Reed and Pulp and New Order, and like I said, Left Field and Underworld and Sleeper and Bowie and have just, oh my god, Primal Scream and Joy Division and so many good artists that, you know, mostly, they're probably big over there across the pond that hadn't really made their way here yet, or at least not to teenagers in the 90s, unless they were like, you know, big music files.
Almost kind of like maybe underground? Kind of like you have to kind of know what you're looking for on finding this music, or...
Yeah, and like I said, this opened a big door for me. Mm-hmm. And you know, and like, oh my god, if Granted, the internet wasn't around, so it was kind of hard. Like, I would have to, like, buy an album and stuff like that. To, you know, yeah. if this movie came out and this, you know, if internet was a thing, shit, I would just download it all. It'd be so easy.
Right.
But, yeah, so much good. And it was techno and electronica in a different way than American mm-hmm. music was. It wasn't so, like, beat heavy, just oomsh, oomsh, oomsh in your face. It was more do-do, do-do, do-do. It was, I don't know how to describe it. But yeah, it's great. That Lou Reed song, Perfect Day, which is not electronic at all, is maybe my favorite song on the whole album, was Lou Reed's Perfect Day. The song they play when he's ODing and he's just tripping out, and it's like, whoa. He's just like tripping out. He's tripping balls because he's ODing, and they're playing that song, and it's so good. And I don't know how many times I would like smoke out and listen to that song, because in my mind, like, this is a song you listen to when you trip balls, so there you go. Oh, yeah, this song, I play this a lot when I was in my late teens, early 20s. Yeah, listen to this album a lot. Both albums. I forget which song does what, because I've kind of combined them into one folder and just labeled it Trainspotting. But yeah, they had two albums, and they're both really, really good. Really fucking good albums. Cool. So, yeah, Trainspotting is my number four. Yes, yes? Yes.
You know, they announced, they started filming the sequel of Trainspotting 2. Yeah, what do you think about that?
I mean the novel has a sequel. I mean, the source material is there. It's not like they're just milking it for the sake of milking it.
Okay, all right, I didn't know that. Okay,
yeah. So, but I don't know if we can get everybody on board. Ewan McGregor, Ewan Bremner, what, Carlisle? I don't even know. I don't even remember if they're all in the sequel book. I think they are.
Most of them were. I remember seeing that they're taking pictures of the set and everything.
But Trainspotting was just so good. I mean, is Danny Boyle doing it? The original director?
I'm sure you can Google it. I mean, IMDb it. I'm sure it says it's in there. But
Trainspotting was just so good. And it was such a good snapshot of the time and everything. And I just, if it doesn't work, if the sequel doesn't work, it'll be tarnished. You know, we won't be able to talk about Trainspotting without saying, well, yeah, but... Yeah, the first one was good, but part two and three suck. It's like Matrix. Matrix 1 is so good, but you can't talk about it without mentioning, yeah, but 2 and 3 suck. And I just don't want Trainspotting to be tarnished, because it's such a great movie. It's so funny.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, so that was my number four.
You just mentioned Lou Reed on this one. Lou Reed was on Lost Highway 2. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like Lou Reed. His newer stuff's not bad. No, it's not bad, but it's not great either, is it? Know in your head that it's just shite. They talk about Lou Reed and Trainspotting. About how he's lost it. Had it. Lost it.
Okay, so that was your number four. So, my number four. Okay, this is from 1997. Kind of similar to how Judgment Night kind of did team-ups. This is another kind of team-up of two bands. This is from Spawn, 1997.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
everybody loves Spawn.
We did. This was, I think, one of Chris's top 10 list of his albums in the 90s. So I kind of talked about this a little bit.
On yeah, that album sucks. Episode. Then,
but as far as soundtrack purposes, I think for me, I can still pop this in and listen to it. It's got bands
what
in
year,
here that
what year
I like.
Was this? I'm sorry.
Do what?
What year was it?
97.
97. Okay. I don't know why I never bought it. I remember it. I remember being popular. What was the Manson song that was on it?
Long Road Out of Hell. Long Hard Road Out of Hell.
It's a long, hard road out of... Yeah, I remember the video was trippy as fuck.
Yeah.
Very it's funny androgynous that guy was.
Well, it's funny because the team up on Manson was with him in Sneaker Pimps. And... Apparently, I still remember this story. Sneaker Pimps went on, you know, MTV or whatever, and they talked shit about Manson. And that was like kind of like the last we heard of Sneaker Pimps. Oh. And so now on, like, you don't even see, like, it doesn't say Marilyn Manson with Sneaker Pimps. It just says Marilyn Manson's Long Hard Road Out of Hell. It doesn't, like, they get no credit.
They were in on that song? I didn't know that.
From Six Underground, yeah.
I didn't. I mean, I know who they are. I didn't know that they were had anything to do with that song. Wow, it's true. History is written by the victors.
Yeah,
history remembers kings, not soldiers. Yeah, shit. I guess it worked because I didn't even know they had anything to do with that song.
Yeah. But it's some really good songs. Filter is teaming up with Crystal Method for Trip Like I Do. Korn and Chemical Brothers for Kick the PA. Stabbing Westward is Torn Apart. I can't remember who teamed up with them. One Man Army by Prodigy and Tom Morello. So,
of Rage Against the Machine.
It's good, like rock and techno mix, sort of.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah, good I remember, music. Like, I think because everybody else I knew owned it, so I never got around to buying it, because, like, everybody else was listening to it. Like, yeah, I'll save my $15 and buy something to buy another soundtrack. Buy the Trainspotting soundtrack.
It's funny you mentioned this on the one you last mentioned, but, yeah, going out and buying a soundtrack, buying a CD, it's like, nowadays, it's nothing to just go on YouTube and just do a search for it. You can find it, you know, do whatever you need to do with it. But, like, when this time frame came around, like, if you wanted it, you had to go out of your house and go to the store and buy it.
Yeah.
buy the whole thing.
You were buying it because it was, like, one or two songs you liked, and you just kind of had to hope and pray that there was other good shit on there. And most of these, yeah, yeah, it turns out, like, woo, that turned out to be a good album. I lucked out. But I have albums that I bought soundtracks, too. I bought it for the one song. I was like, everything else sucks. And I listened to just that one song. I was like, that was $15 well spent for one song. Yeah. Even iTunes doesn't charge $15 for a song.
But that's how we are now compared to how it was then. You know, it's like you didn't have a choice. You know, you didn't have YouTube or internet or iTunes or anything like that. You barely had MTV. Like, if depending on how big the song was, that's pretty much that one single is all you had to go off of. And you, like you were saying, you had to hope and pray that it was more than one good song.
Yeah.
on the CD.
Do you remember that that one hit wonder in the 90s, White Town? They had that song, "You're a Woman." I could never be your woman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were just a one hit wonder, but that was a cool song. I bought that album. The album sucked. So I was like, fuck, I had to eat the whole album just for that one track. Man. That happened a lot back in the 90s.
You know what I did to get some of my CDs?
What?
I skimmed out on Columbia House. did the 12 CDs for a penny.
I never did the Columbia House thing. My older brother did, and I saw how fast he fell into that hole.
Mm-hmm.
So I use that as like a lesson. Like, oh yeah, I won't be doing that.
Funny, I watch not so much now, but I watch Goldberg's on Hulu, and they just did one of the recent episodes is about Columbia House, and yeah, it was the whole thing about him. if you knew what it was back then, you got to kick out of that episode. So
what am I? I've been watching something. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. It takes place today. But her and her roommate Titus Andromedon, they're like so poor that they still buy tapes. And it's like a running gag throughout the whole series of like a new tape came in, you know, and things like that. It's just like it's like a constant running gag that they still listen to. And the tapes they get are like from the 90s because, you know, they don't make tapes of modern music. So it's just a funny running gag. Not that it's dated. It's just that they're so poor. They're still doing the tapes. It's really funny. Such a funny show. Fucking go watch Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix. Season 2 dropped like last month. So fucking good. Mm. Back to music.
So we're in the top 3, right? The final 3? So
yeah. Top 3.
If we don't run into each other's music here, I'm going to be surprised, but
okay. Well, my top 3 is one that I'm sure you can guess. If I haven't mentioned it yet, you knew it was going to be on here. Kind of the way I said I had to add a Wes Anderson movie, I kind of have to have a Quentin Tarantino movie. I even said that when I was talking about Wes Anderson, that he's got such an interesting taste in music and how it complements his films. And it's, of course, Pulp Fiction.
This is your number 3?
This is my number 3.
Wow. Okay. I thought it'd be a little bit lower.
Yeah.
Or closer to 1, if not 1.
yeah, it was it's Pulp Fiction soundtrack. What's your number 3? No, I mean, what can you say about this? Again, it had the dialogue, which was fun, which I got a kick out of, and it also kind of introduced me, like, to Al Green, which was very important to me. And, you know, Dusty Springfield and Ricky Nelson have songs on these. And it has a lot of that kind of like a 60s like surf music, if that's even a genre. There's a few songs in there that have that. Obviously, that Son of a Preacher Man song, holy fuck, I listen to that song all the time. I still love that fucking song. And it's like an old song. I'm sure people who are older is like, yeah, that song has been around for forever. I never heard it, and I loved it. It was great. And that that girl, I'll Be Your Woman Soon, so fucking good. And it was like, again, almost none of this music was music I'd ever even heard before. Right. Jungle Boogie, like, you know, I'm kind of like, you're lame if you never heard any of that music. I'm sorry, I hadn't. I never heard any of this music, and it was all great. Mm-hmm. And it was just like all great music that I never heard before. And it's, I mean, isn't that what a great album is about? Great music that you never heard before? Yeah, I mean, what can you say about this album? It was awesome.
Which is why I'm surprised that you're number three. Mm-hmm. I'm really surprised. I'm really curious to know what your number one is.
Oh, aren't we all? I'm sure the listeners are drooling. What's his favorite album? Please, they're not even listening anymore.
Yeah. is anything else you want to say about that, or?
No, just, I mean, Quentin's albums are all good. Like, Reservoir Dogs is a really fucking good album, too. And so is Jackie Brown. I mean, I could have put any of those from his 90s, movies. Mm-hmm. But this is the best one, I think. It was his movie from the 90s. It was the best soundtrack from the 90s. I still listen to this album sometimes. It's just really good.
Okay. All right. So.
Bring out the Gimp.
That.
I think the kid's sleeping. Guess you have to go wake him up now, don't you? That saxophone's. Oh, fuck. Pumps me up. I'm pumped up now.
All right. So, my number three is going to be from 1996. It's a sequel for Crow, City of Angels.
Your number three is the Crow, City of Angels. Okay, yes. I think I can guess what your number one or two is. Okay, why do you like this one?
You know what? As good as the first Crow movie soundtrack was, and I think that helped the overall feel and vibe of the first movie, this one, I think I was
Wait,
more...
so you think this is better than the Crow soundtrack?
I'm more drawn to the music in this one instead of the first one.
Oh, okay.
So, like Filters, Drastidol, White Zombies, I'm Your Boogeyman, the cover you did for that. This actually introduced me to PJ Harvey, with Nick and Cousin. And I have to mention this song, I hate to do it, Gold Dust Woman by Hole. That's Damn you, song. Courtney Love, for making a catchy tune. It's a good song, but I had to give her credit. I don't want to give her credit.
Oh.
But yeah, it's one of the best songs on this soundtrack. So yeah.
Yeah. God, there's a song on there by Iggy Pop has a song on there, Let Me Be Your Dog, which, well, I mean, it's an old Stooges song. Isn't it on there?
I think so. The Iggy Pop song, I Want to Be Your Dog, it's on there.
Okay, yeah, because that's an old Stooges song, and oh, you know what it is? It's also on the, it's on another soundtrack that was going to be an honorable mention.
Okay. Oh, Korn had a song, Sean Olsen. It's kind of like a slower song for Korn, but it's, if you like Korn, there you go, they're on there too. Toadies is on there.
It's a good album.
Yeah, yeah. Overall, it's a good, like, 90s alternative rock soundtrack, I think.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that PJ Cousins song, Naked Cousins. I remember I had a girlfriend once, and I was listening to it, and she was like, what the fuck is this song? I'm running. She was making fun of it, and I was like, bitch, we're done. There's the door. Oh, God. No, I didn't at that note, but I knew, and that was the moment I knew it wasn't going to work out when she didn't like that PJ Harvey song.
But
Drastidol, the Filter song you mentioned, they play it in his getting ready montage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's putting on the coat, and he's, you know, his arms are coming out the sleeves, and it's like doo 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 doo. It's all building up. Oh, fucking shit! I don't know how many times I'd be getting ready to go out that night, and I'm getting dressed. You know, I have a drink and I'm getting ready and I'm playing that song and do 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 as I'm putting my belt on. Oh, it pumps you up. It's a pump you up song.
Yeah, it is. It's a good song.
Yeah. It's a good song. Pumps me the fuck up again. Oh, I'm pumped up again.
All right, so that is my number three, Crow 2, City of Angels from 1996.
Yeah. I used to love, I was working at the theater when that came out. I used to fucking love to clean up the theater, listen to that album, to those songs. Speaking of which, there was another movie. Came out in 97 when I worked at the theater. I used to enjoy working there too and catching some of this music. And it is a awesome movie. It's one of my favorite movies. It is, I think, John Cusack's best movie. And no, I'm not talking about Better Off Dead. And I said it came out in 97. No, I'm not talking about Con Air either. I am talking about Gross Point Blank.
Mm, damn, I forgot about the movie. Yes.
Holy okay. shit, dude. Now, when I said, this album introduced me to this artist, you know, Rushmore introduced me to the Kinks, and or PJ Harvey. This one introduced me to the Clash.
Okay.
And that was very pivotal in my life. I love The Clash. This one, particularly Rudy Can't Fail, which was off London Calling. So I bought London Calling because it had Rudy Can't Fail on it. And oh my God, London Calling, like, changed my whole world. That is a tremendous album. It would probably be in one of my top 10 albums if I got to do that list. Golly fuck, this is such a good album. You could tell John Cusack is a big fan of The Clash. If you've, anybody who's ever seen High Fidelity, he name drops The Clash, like, I don't know how many times in that movie. this album also introduced me to that David Bowie Queen song, Under Pressure. Okay. I never actually heard it before. And I mean, now, especially since David Bowie just passed recently, this song is getting a lot of airplay. But it's used in such a great scene where he's holding a baby. And, you know, he's a killer for hire. And this baby's looking at him, and he's kind of looking at the baby, and they're kind of staring at each other, and he's realizing maybe there's more to life while they're playing Under Pressure, and it's so fucking good. And this movie, it takes place, like I said, it came out in 97, and he's going back to his 10-year high school reunion. So he was in high school in the 80s. So there's a big 80s feel to this movie. Yeah. But it's not like 80s songs that are going to be on the Time Life Sounds of the 80s. It's not the hit 80s songs. It's the one that people who really grew up in the 80s would probably remember.
Right.
Songs
right.
By like Echo and the Bunnymen and the Pixies and the Specials and Daz Band and Faith No More. So much good music that, again, I hadn't heard of any of these. Of the Violent Femmes song, Blister in the Sun, doom 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 doom. Everybody remembers that song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
English Beat. And there's a few 90s songs in there too, like Guns N' Roses cover of Living Let Die is on there too, and that's a really fun scene where he shows up to his old house and it's become like a convenience store. It's such a funny scene. You can never go home again, but I guess you can still shop there. But yeah, like I said, this Pete Townsend's Let My Love Open the Door, but it was a slow mix. I'd heard the fast mix that he's done. That's one of my favorite songs ever, but his slow mix, oh my God, it's so fucking good too. This movie, forget what a great movie it is, and the music complements it so well. Oh God, this is such, and it introduced me to The Clash. I mean, that right there is probably what trumped, like, say, Pulp Fiction. Because, like I said, The Clash is one of my favorite bands, and this movie kind of exposed me to it. And Joe Strummer, the singer-songwriter of The Clash, he also composed the score for this movie. And the instrumental score of this movie is so fucking good, because the guy from The Clash did it. Again, there's a scene where he's in his apartment, or he's in his hotel room, he's getting ready for the prom, and he's doing his tie, and he's in the mirror talking to himself, and they're playing this awesome little bit of music. Again, many of the night, I was getting ready, getting dressed, just the same as Drasatol. That song was in there too, from the Gross Point Blank soundtrack, and I was using it to pump me up, to get ready, to go to the bar, go to the club, whatever. This music, the 99 Luft Balloons was in this too. When they're disposing of a body, they're carrying a body down the stairs playing 99 Luft Balloons. How fucking awesome is that? Oh God, this is just a perfect soundtrack to accompany a perfect movie. One of my favorite movies ever, actually. One of the last good movies with Danny Aykroyd in it. Danny Aykroyd's in it too, and he's hilarious.
Yeah, one of his last.
When's the last time you actually saw him, like, play not just a cameo, but, like, an actual character in a movie?
Right, yeah.
It's been a while, man.
You know, Yeah.
Anyway, so for all the reasons, Gross Point Blank is my second favorite soundtrack of the 90s.
Okay. All right. So for me, for my number two pick is our first run-in of overlap. My number two is Pulp Fiction.
Oh.
So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Why do you like Pulp
Dude,
Fiction?
Dude, you cannot... Whatever your criteria is...
Tell me in your own words, for your own reasons, why that album's awesome.
Whatever your criteria is for top 10 best movie soundtracks, whatever. You have to include Pulp Fiction in this in a list. I'm sorry, yeah. You just have to. It's like, but for everything you said and for everything we've already said on our Quentin episode, damn, dude, it just... another thing, the good thing about the music that's in here... besides, like you're saying, it's kind of different, you know. It's that the surfer California style music and mix in with a lot of different stuff, but it just everything that's used complements the movie so much, so well. And then the fact that he includes the clips from the movie into the right before the music or whatever, it's
that really helped me get the Ezekiel speech down before it ever hit VHS.
Ah.
I had that speech down. Still do.
And
great vengeance and furious anger. Good speech.
One thing you didn't mention, as far as like recognizable music and things like that, people like recognize the music now, but how many of those people recognized it before this movie even came out? Like, I think this movie and the soundtrack, I think it introduced so many people to this music that now it's as commonplace. Like, of course,
when you hear,
like, everybody knows,
yeah, when you hear Dick Dale's Miserloo,
yeah, everybody knows that. Where they hear it from?
Well, nowadays they only use it when they're making like references or jokes about Pulp Fiction. That movie totally owns that song now.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no distinction between the two. If you hear, they're going for a Pulp Fiction vibe or a Pulp Fiction gag, or it's completely associated with that movie. I didn't even mention that song, yeah.
But dude, this is so good. I still have the CD. It's it. You said like Pulp Fiction, it's a perfect film. This soundtrack is almost a perfect soundtrack. it's got a nice compliment for a movie itself.
Yeah. So. There's one track on there that I tend to skip. It's the one where that the rapist is in the pawn shop listening to when they walk in. It starts out with the whistling. I don't know how the song goes.
Yeah,
I don't think I don't think I've ever gotten past those first 10 seconds. Because this is a song rapers listen to. And I'm so not a raper. So I always tend to skip that track.
All right, so.
But beyond that, perfect soundtrack. And it's probably, beyond that. And if you are a raper, then you probably think it is a perfect soundtrack.
There you go.
So if you love this soundtrack, you're probably a raper. I think is the takeaway of
exactly,
what we're talking
about. Exactly, yeah, I think so.
At the end of the day, that's what
there's
it's
There's a
about.
Message to be sent. It's
Okay.
So wait, so that was my number two. You've already said your number two, right? So
it was Gross Point Blank, right. Yeah.
Before we get into our number ones, do you want to do a quick, just a few quick hits for honorable mentions that didn't make your top 10?
Yeah, you had a couple. You mentioned The Crow.
Mm-hmm.
City of, actually, I was going to put The Crow 1 also.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was going back and forth between Crow and Crow 2 on my list, but yeah.
Yeah. I omitted them both just because I figured you probably would put one or two of them and I didn't want to overlap. But Crow 1's really good, too.
It is.
Cure, Nine Inch Nails, good album. Violent Femmes. Both Crows, I was going to put Batman Forever and Mortal Kombat, and also I was going to put Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Oh, okay.
Which that same Iggy Pop song we were talking about, Be Your Dog, is also on there. And in a similar reasons to Trainspotting, most of the music there is all obviously British music. British, not punk music, but a little, kind of a punk
a little
music.
Bit, a little British punk, yeah.
Alternative British punk, yeah, again, and it opened my eyes to a whole new genre of music. It's a really good soundtrack. It also has a little bit of dialogue, which is super fun to me.
Mm-hmm.
And another honorable mention was going to be Escape from L.A.
Hmm. What was on that one?
Again, I used to clean the theater listening to that White Zombie song, Escape from L.A. Tori Amos is in there. It's Tool. is in there. The song Sweat off their Opiate album. Stabbing Westward is in there. It's just, you know, good alternative music. I want to say it came out in like 96. There's no reasoning other than just, yeah, there's a few good songs on there that I dug. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I actually did enjoy the Escape from LA soundtrack quite a bit. And I used to, like, be psyched. Like, two movies are dropping, like Escape from LA and something shitty. I'm like, I'll go clean up Escape from LA. I always volunteered that because I could sweep up while listening to some White Zombie, which is always fun. And I remember, because I kind of had long hair there. One time, I remember I was cleaning up the theater myself, and I was totally headbanging. My hair was, I was whipping my hair back and forth, and it was super fun. So that's it. Also, the Magnolia soundtrack from 99. Although, that whole album is done by one artist, by Amy Mann. It's a great album, and she's got some great songs. But, I don't know, because it was just one artist doing the whole soundtrack, eh. But Magnolia is a good movie with a good soundtrack. Amy Mann's awesome. So those are my honorable mentions. And Batman Forever.
Okay. Okay, so for me, I do have a few honorable mentions. One, you mentioned Mallrats for one of yours. Mine, as an honorable mention, was Clerks. Mm-hmm. I originally had that in my top 10, but it got bumped out. But Alice in Chains. The song that's on there. I just lost the name of the song. But there, that single that's on there. And then also,
Soul Asylum had a good song.
Yeah, Soul Asylum. Yeah,
the end credit song.
Yeah, and the Chewbacca song. You can't forget the Chewbacca song. But anyway, that's.
I don't know the name. I don't know the name of that song from the beginning when he's opening the store, he's making coffee, he's doing the whole thing. But the setting up the shop. Mm. Yeah, I think I said this in the Kevin Smith. I used to listen to that all the time while I'd be opening up.
Yeah.
When I worked at this photo studio, and it was my, because you had to assemble the developing machines, you had to assemble the printers and fill them with water, put the chemicals, and it was a whole to-do to get the store up and running. And I would listen to that song while I was getting the store all the time. Which I don't know why, because it put me in a bad mood. Like, why would you listen to a song that's just going to put you in a bad mood about being at work every day? I open up the store and I'm like, I'm grumpy. I don't know why I inflicted that upon myself day after day. But I did, because it was a good song from a good soundtrack.
Okay, a couple other honorable mentions. I didn't put them on here as actual list or anything because they're actual scores. And like you, I didn't want to put scores on my list. But one, this may sound kind of weird, but Con Air, and then the score for Terminator 2. Both of them. I don't know. I just something clicked when I was listening to the music on both these, and they just both had. Obviously, Terminator 2, we all know the
James theme. Horner did Terminator 2, didn't he?
Did what?
Was it James Horner who composed
Terminator 2? I think, I want to say yes on that.
Who did Con Air? I think I liked those scores. It never occurred to me to add them. God, if we're talking score, you know what score is good from the 90s? A buddy of mine, when I mentioned this episode a long time ago when we came up with it, I think one of the first soundtracks he said was the soundtrack to Sleepy Hollow. Hmm. And that is a pretty good one. It's creepy. It's creepy as fuck. Especially if you're in the woods,
actually,
in the middle of the night, while you're tripping on Robitussin, and you're just in the middle of the trees and you're listening to the Sleepy Hollow soundtrack. Yeah, it's trippy as fuck. I highly recommend doing that.
Actually, the soundtrack for Con Air is composed by Mark Mancina.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, the connection to Bad Boys there. So.
Connection to Bruckheimer.
Yeah.
Yeah. To Jerry Bruckheimer, who produced them both. I think, Don Simpson he produced Bad Boys, but then he died. So Bruckheimer. Con Air was actually Bruckheimer's first solo movie.
I think he needed,
because they did The Rock together, then he died, and then he produced Con Air. And ever since then, Bruckheimer's just gone batshit crazy. He's gotten more successful, you know, but
I was going to say gotten crazy. That shit rich, but yeah, crazy might
be too. I think he needed Simpson to ground him a little bit.
Oh, well.
Back when they were making, Beverly Hills Cop and Top Gun and classics. Now Bruckheimer's doing, like, Transformers 4.
Well, one more honorable mention, and this is kind of like a little asterisk for a soundtrack, but it's a soundtrack to a movie, but it's... It's an animated movie, Street Fighter 2.
You know what's funny is I was when you said Mortal Kombat was your when you pull it for my next one, I was going to be like, funny enough, the soundtrack for Street Fighter is mine, the Jean-Claude Van Damme one, but I don't remember a single fucking song.
No, not the Jean-Claude Van Damme one, the animated Street Fighter movie that had Korn, Alice in Chains, Silverchair, KMFDM. There's one scene in particular where they're playing Them Bones and he's driving down down the freeway in his convertible.
In his convertible.
Yeah.
That is why, like I said, my first car was a convertible. God, I don't know how many times I listened to it. Because Dirt is an amazing album. That would also be in my top 10 90s albums.
Yeah.
Listen to that song many times with the top down.
Yeah. It's
also a Silverchair song in the same scene, right?
I want to say yes. I think so.
Or maybe it's later in the movie, but he's driving this top down. They're playing that Silverchair song.
Yeah.
Ken.
Yeah, Ken is, yeah. It's funny Ken, because, yeah. Like, Them Bones ends, like, right when he pulls up to the chick's house. It stops.
Yeah. Yeah, Them Bones.
I always try
man,
to, like,
he timed it awesome.
When I'm driving and that music, that song's playing, I always try to stop right when the music ends.
You're in the middle of the highway. You're like,
I'm trying to get to my destination.
What the fuck, asshole? I'm listening to Them Bones. But anyway. Yeah, that KMFDM song when Chun-Li is fighting Vega, that dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, that's a fucking awesome song. That's an awesome scene. Dang, I didn't even think about that as an album.
See, I looked up. I don't think that the soundtrack, that American soundtrack, was released individually as a CD. And that's why I didn't put it in my top 10 list, because I couldn't find that itself. But that was a badass.
Last scene in the movie when Bison shows up in the 18-wheeler, they play like, "Are you ready?"
Yeah,
and then they play Korn at the end credits. Yeah, fuck, that was a good soundtrack. That clearly was like the movie was already made and done, and then American audiences or American producers, distributors get a hold of it. We need some music. What's popular right now?
Yeah, yeah.
And they just took a smattering of whatever was really cool and put it in there for
it
American
audiences.
It works though.
But yeah, it works in the movie.
It was a fun little mixtape.
Yeah. But anyway, those are some of my honorable mentions that I had. So
nicely done on that Street Fighter one. I would never have thought of that in a million years.
A deep cut, as a certain director would say.
Okay, so we're here now. We're doing this.
This is it.
No going back, because I can't bump it.
I'm honest, thinking the same thing for my number one, too. It's like, we can't change it.
But I was thinking, like, I can't bump it, but to be honest, there was no other choice for my number one.
Alright.
As we said earlier, it's not about what was the best music or the best movie, but it was about what it meant to us and how it shaped us and everything. And one of the big points of this has nothing to do with the soundtrack itself. It's more the fact that this was the first CD I ever owned.
Okay.
I'd be sitting there on our little bitty boombox, and I could hit a next track and snick. Oh my god! I just jumped to the next track without waiting, without fast forwarding. Like, that was mind blowing to me that you could just jump tracks like that. Like, this was CDs, and if you're listening to this and you're fairly young, you're like, what the fuck? You know, but it was a big deal.
It was, yeah.
In the early 90s. Well, CDs have been around since the late 80s, but, you know, a CD player was like $800 or some shit. I couldn't afford that shit.
Yeah.
So my first album that I ever owned was the soundtrack to The Lion King. And it is an amazing soundtrack. It's not even just that it was my first CD. Mm-hmm. This would be on my list anyway. Fuck, it's The Lion King soundtrack, dude. How fucking awesome was the music in that movie?
Yeah.
I still listen to it. It's still, like, on my random playlist. I was cutting the grass one day, so I had my little iPod on, wrapped around my arm, and I had my headphones in, and then I kind of went a few houses down to my buddy, and we were in the backyard, and we started drinking and playing golf, because his backyard is a golf course, and I'm rocking, and I'm, like, putting, getting a hole in one, and I'm just like, yeah, and I happened to be listening to Hakuna Matata at the time, and I'm just like, Hakuna Matata, bitch! And it didn't even make sense. Like, how is that shit-talky to just yell Hakuna Matata in somebody's face? But I was doing it because I was drunk and I was listening to Hakuna Matata and I was rocking it and I was in a good mood because I got, like, you know, my short game is pretty good. Because it's, God, this is still, it's still awesome to listen to. This, I mean, it's the fucking Lion King soundtrack. When I was in the military and I got out, like, the day I got out, I had some civilian friends, and they were big stoners, and for years we were friends, and obviously I could never, like, hang out and smoke out with them, and then, like, the day I got out, I went to their house, and it was, like, 4 years in the making, like, oh my god, you're gonna smoke out with us and hang out, and At some point in the night, I was going through her CDs, like, you have the Lion King soundtrack. I put it on, and all three of us are running through the apartment singing along like we were 13 years old again. We knew all the words still. We knew every beat and dance, all that stuff. You know, I'm singing the Scar lines. She's singing the Whoopi Goldberg as a Hyena lines. Like, we all knew how it broke down. It's part of our, it's in our blood, it's in our DNA, this album. We know it's so fucking good. I think when I was like a freshman, they show us a movie as a treat, and they were playing Lion King, and all the girls are singing along, and I'm like the only boy in the class who's singing along with it, and maybe in hindsight that wasn't the slickest move, but I'm hanging out with the girls, while all the boys are sitting there acting like they're too cool for school, that they don't know all the fucking words to the Lion King soundtrack, which is an amazing soundtrack. This thing had a Broadway show, which I've never seen, but I'd like to one day. I don't know if it uses any of the original music. One of my alarms to wake up in the morning is because it wakes me the fuck up. I kind of actually hate that song now because it's disturbed me from many a sweet dream. But yeah, it's one of my go-to alarms. Come on, I don't even know the fucking words. It's probably Swahili or some shit, but you know what the fuck right. I'm singing about. Anybody who has ever held a kitten at one point in their life holds it up and does the fucking Simba thing. You do that when you're holding, or even a fucking puppy, or a kitten preferably, but I mean, everybody does the fucking thing.
Yeah.
It's the circle of life. Everybody knows that, dude. Elton John, Can You Feel the Love Tonight? That's still an amazing fucking song. I still enjoy the fuck out of Can You Feel the Love Tonight, Elton John's song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The first album I ever owned, I mean, first CD I ever owned, I listened to the fuck out of it, but like I said, it's still timeless. It's great. I mean, Disney music in the 90s was totally rocking it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could have put Beauty and the Beast or Little Mermaid as well, or Aladdin. They all have great soundtracks. But, it was the Lion King, man. Elton John's music and Hans Zimmer. And there's even a few tracks that are just Hans Zimmer's score. Mm-hmm. And those are amazing. The one where Simba's like running back home after he decides he has to be king. They got like, you know, Swahili African chorus gibber. I don't even know what the fuck they're saying, but it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So good. Love that song. Love that album. Great album. Great album. My number one. Soundtrack to The Lion King. Love it.
It's probably, you can say that could be on anyone's just top 10 albums of the 90s, just in general. Really.
It is. It's a great one. I'm not apologizing for it. And I think the fact that it was my first CD ever is probably why I bumped it to number one. But that's doing it a disservice. It could very well have been my number one anyways. It's so good. And I listen to it, like, so much. And I still do. And the thing about these songs is you sing along when you hear them. You know, you're listening to, you know, Crow or some album, you're listening to Tool. You might not sing, you might just jam out. But this music makes you want to sing. And you want to get into it. And, you know, it perks you up. And you want to sing along to it, you know. Be prepared. Oh, my God. That song is so fucking good. And where do we feature? Just listen to Teacher. I know it sounds sordid, but you'll be rewarded. Yeah, I still know it's still good.
Okay, well, that's a good number one, so.
But my teeth and ambitions are bad. Be prepared. You got Jeremy Irons fucking singing, okay? Fucking awesome is that.
All right, so, that's your number one.
That's my number one. The Lion fucking King.
All right, my number one. You could think I'm probably nuts for this. And again, I'm going to repeat what I said at the start of this. This is in no means, you know, the best albums in the 90s or whatever, top chart, you know, top of the charts, anything. This is just me for the movie itself and for the impact it had on me. I actually thought for a second when you're building up your number one, I thought you're kind of going what I was going to say. I thought, did we pick the same one? But no. Mine.
Wait. So you didn't see Lion King coming?
No, I didn't. No.
It snuck up on you in the tall grass,
like
Nala, and she's about to go eat Pumbaa.
May I continue?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
All right. My number one, it barely made it into this list because it came out in 1990.
Oh, I thought you could say like it was barely good enough.
No.
I was like, it's your number one.
Well, okay. It depends on who you ask.
1990.
It depends on who you ask.
1990.
We've covered this movie before in a past episode, but I thought that maybe the soundtrack for it should be spotlighted a little bit too. So this is for 1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, wow. Wow, that, okay, number one. Interesting. Tell me why.
Personally, because of the impact that this franchise and this movie had on me growing up as a kid. And to this day, look, a new Ninja Turtle movie is about to come out. So this franchise has been in pop culture for a lot of years. So, but this one, besides just being part of the movie itself, but the I think the main single on this one by MC Hammer, This Is What We Do. That's a good catchy song. I don't care who you are.
This is what we do. Wait, that's the main single?
Well, to me it is, but I know the Turtle Power, that's probably that was made for this soundtrack. I think there's some other ones, 9.95, Spin That Wheel. They're all kind of catchy.
Yeah, who does that song?
Yeah, kind of catchy early 90s techno music.
9.95. What does that even mean?
Yo, Casey, 9.95.
Yeah, Casey, you kissed her at 9.95. What the fuck does that even mean? God, don't get me wrong. I rocked the fuck out of that album as well, the tape.
And it's not a big soundtrack. Like, there's only like, I think like 10 songs on it, and some of like the last half is just like music. So it's not like, I think the first five is just actual songs, and the last half is just the score. But for what it was,
so why'd you put this so high? I mean, that's what I'm wrapping my head around. Why is this number one for you?
You know, I was going back and forth between that and Pulp Fiction, and to be honest, I thought your number one was going to be Pulp Fiction, so I didn't want it to be the same one, so I just I stuck to my guns, and I left it number one, and that's what it's going to be, so ta-da.
Okay, Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I know, it's weird, I don't know, but it's just, I
did not see that one coming.
That's why
I did not see that
and
coming.
That's why I did it. No, I made up money. Yeah, so obviously it's to each his own. It's all subjective, but
except Lion King, if you don't like that, you're retarded.
You might have something in Pulp Fiction.
It's not retarded. I'm sorry. Not Lion King. If you don't like that, you're stupid.
But anyway, so that's that's my top 10 list, and that's your top 10 list too. So, do you have anything else that you want to add on to this, or any asterisks or anything else?
I don't know. I don't think so. I probably will come up with something once we stop recording. I'll be like, fuck. But, like I said, my number one and my number 10 were pretty clear. I knew Lion King was going to be number one, and I knew Space Jam. I just knew I wanted to talk about Space Jam. Mm-hmm. But I knew it was probably like, God, come on, Space Jam. I just knew it belonged to number 10. And, like 9 through 6 could have easily been swapped around.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, my 4th, like 5 through 2 could have easily been swapped around too. On a different day, I might have put Pulp Fiction at number 2, but the fact that Gross Point exposed me to new bands, but that I really glommed on to those bands, particularly The Clash.
Yeah.
I put that, because I don't think Pulp Fiction had any bands where I'm like, ooh, this introduced me to Al Green, let me buy like 4 or 5 Al Green albums after this, the way I did with The Clash. And like I said, I was super into The Clash, and then about like 2 years later, Joe Strummer died, and the lead singer of The Clash, and the country mourned, and I felt legitimately a part of it, because even though I'd only been a fan for 2 years, I felt like I was really a fan of them, and I collectively mourned his loss, and I almost felt glad that I got in under the wire, mm-hmm. and became like a legitimate fan of his right before he passed, a couple years after this album came out. So, yeah, for that, I put Gross Point as high as I could, but it couldn't get any higher than Lion King for me.
And if you want to think about it, my number one is technically my number two, because my number one is going to be Toasty soundtrack.
Spoiler alert, I tried to get people to go back and listen to it to find out, but now they don't have to. Yeah, I don't know, these are just... you know, they shaped my adolescence and, you know, my music taste. And like I said, movies were so big to me because I was so into movies. And I, like, you know, a good chunk of these, the ones from, like, 94, 95, I think I owned them before I ever bought, like, an actual album. So this was all I ever listened to was soundtracks. So, yeah, soundtracks were a big thing for me in the 90s. Because something about seeing or hearing a song in a movie and it puts you in that state of mind or puts you in that mood or it gives you this association. And then when you hear that song again, it you can't separate it. And it just, it plays in your head in such a cool way, more so than if you just heard it for the first time on the radio.
Yeah.
You know? Because you have all these extra connotations and, you know, visual things to it, visual sensory associations and stuff like that. And it's just, soundtracks are so cool. And when they do them right, oh, they're so awesome. And they can really make a song work in a way it might not have if you just stumbled across it, you know, playing it on a CD or something. So, yeah, I was psyched to do the soundtrack album.
Has a song from a soundtrack, or, you know, back in the day when we watched MTV and there's music videos for a single, and it was, say, from the motion picture soundtrack, whatever. Did that ever make you, if you haven't seen the movie already, did that ever make you want to go see the movie?
I don't know, because I saw a lot of movies in the 90s. I watched movies all the fucking time. I don't think so. I mean, I can't. If you named a few songs, I might be able to say yes or no. But off the top of my head, I can't think of one off the top of my head that came on MTV and it was like, it's from this movie. Because I already knew enough. Even if I hadn't seen the movie, I knew who was in it. I knew I knew what it was about. It wasn't going to sway my opinion.
Yeah.
Because my music opinion was not going to sway my movie opinion, of which I am like 100 times more opinionated about my movie taste. So, yeah. One song was not going to change my mind about a movie.
Okay. Yeah, just thought I'd ask.
I guess.
Yeah.
Like I said, this is when I was like in my teens and I was very, very pretentious about my movies.
Oh, hey, before we go, are there any like soundtracks from today's scene that you want to kind of throw out there that, you know, obviously we couldn't mention on 90s soundtrack, but what about today's music?
Well, like I said, nowadays, when you go see a movie and you hear a song you like, you just download the song.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't, like, gone out and acquired the whole soundtrack in a while. But I think the last time it's been a few years since I actually obtained, like, the whole soundtrack because I thought it was that good. And I think it was Drive. Did you ever see that movie? Ryan Gosling?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Carey Mulligan? It was the first time I ever saw Oscar Isaac in a movie. First time I ever learned his name, because I was like, what's the name of that dude? He's good. That soundtrack, it's mostly a score, and it has like four actual songs in it. But all of them have like an 80s vibe to the songs. Like, if you were listening, you might even think they were 80s music. Not that the movie has, God, I don't know how to describe it. Drive is a really awesome soundtrack. God, you know what was the soundtrack for the 90s off the top of my head I just realized is really good? And I might have put it on the list if I had thought about it. Fear and Loathing. But it was nothing but like 60s, 70s music. You know what was a really good soundtrack from like the mid-2000s? It was Garden State.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Garden State had, you know, a few Shins, 07. Garden State was a pretty good soundtrack, yeah. I assume Zach Braff, obviously he wrote and directed it, and that's like basically his playlist. But a lot of the songs, you would hear them on Scrubs, and you start to realize, wow, Zach Braff has got some pull on Scrubs. You know what soundtrack I kind of liked from, I want to say it was 2000, so I guess I couldn't have put it on this list anyway. And I mean, you might agree with me. Titan A.E.
Okay. What song was wrong there?
I don't know any of the artists. Excuse me. I don't know any of the artists' names. I just like the songs. And they're very, like, aimed at, like, early teenagers. Like, you know, they're so poppy. And the only artist I remember who was in it was Lit. And they had that one single. Fuck, how did it go? I can't think of it. I like the Tiny E soundtrack. Fuck you. You're looking at me like I'm stupid for liking Tiny E. You know, it's 80s, but you know what one of my favorite soundtracks of all time is from the 80s, though? It's Flash Gordon.
Okay.
If this was a top 10 albums of all, soundtracks of all time,
mm-hmm.
Flash Gordon would be, like, in, like, top 5.
I got two from the 80s.
What's that?
Back to the Future. And Transformers.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give you Transformers. But again, I said I didn't want Night Before Christmas because that music was written for the movie. Queen wrote this music for the movie.
Oh, okay.
So does that qualify as a soundtrack per se? I don't know.
But that's but your own, that's your own criteria, so.
Yeah. But Flash Gordon is an amazing soundtrack.
Is the whole thing Queen? It's not Queen. Like,
the whole thing is Queen.
Really?
Huh. The entire score and, like there's songs and then there's just score. It's all Queen. Scott Pilgrim is a pretty good soundtrack. Beck did a lot of the music for Scott Pilgrim. Oh, you know what was going to be an honorable mention for 90s? I totally forgot it. It was going to be an honorable mention. Tank Girl.
Yeah.
That was like, what was that, like 95, something like that, thereabouts?
I want to say yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there was some, there was Portishead in there, and there was just some really good music. And again, there is a particular track in there that I used to love by Devo, and I can't listen to it anymore. Because I hear the opening of that song.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Turn it off.
I don't know where we hear it from, but.
Kind of ruined it. Was it Blues Brothers? That was in the 80s. But again, those were mostly covers sung by John Belushi and Danny Aykroyd. But still, that was one of the first soundtracks ever. When I first started buying CDs,
yeah,
that was like maybe the third or fourth CD I ever bought because I knew I wanted to own it. Because my whole life, I had always loved that soundtrack. So when I got to be old enough to start buying my own CDs, that was one of the very first CDs I searched out and bought was the soundtrack to Blues Brothers. And I still listen to that all the time. That's my top five soundtracks too, but again, it's all covers.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I don't know how fair it is. Watchmen's got a pretty good soundtrack too, like as a mixtape. There's a few good tracks in there.
All right, so I had a good time doing this list. I know X, you've been waiting to do this episode for a long time, so I hope you enjoyed doing this episode too.
Yeah, it's time to wrap this up because now we're just like, this was good, right? Yeah, that was good, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's kind of devolved into that. So, yeah, let's wrap this up.
But if you listeners, if you enjoyed hearing us rant about our favorite music from the 90s soundtracks, tell us how you feel. Tell us what your favorite ones were. Chat with us on social media at facebook.com/popculturerewind. Also, follow us on Twitter at popculturerwnd. Also, catch our past episodes. We've mentioned a couple of, we referenced a couple of our past episodes. Catch them all on popculturerewind.com. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rate and review on there, please. Also on Stitcher. And we are now on Google Play Music. They now do podcasts as well, too. They're trying to get on the game, too. So, but anyway, find us, subscribe to us, like us, tell your friends about us, let people know about us. And until then, we'll be back for another episode. I'm Travis. I'm with Xavier. Always remember to pop your culture.
Later.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good,
though. It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.